even in the physical classes, children cannot sit for more than 7 minutes in a classroom. How do you expect them to sit in an online class for 30 minutes? Most of the parents actually ask me, you know, Divya, my son cannot wake up if I don't give him the mobile phone. That's the addiction to it. The concentration is getting decreased. They're not able to read, write, because always everything is like around, you know, even if the parent says, you know, read beta, they want, mama, can you give me my app? You know, the homework is written in that, you know, so all the while that we teachers and educators, we told children to stay away from screen. And look at what COVID has done. This pandemic has actually turned the entire education upside down. And one man said that now the entire school is in the mobile phone. And see, this has disrupted the entire pattern of the education system. And we're helpless with that.
Hello, everyone. Ashok here. Thank you for tuning into this 8th episode of Indian Startup Stories. I'm very happy today to bring a woman entrepreneur for the first time in this show. Today, our guest is Divya Madhukar, founder and director of Trained Brain Preschool, a division of Trained Brain Education Private Limited, having its branches in Bangalore. In this episode, Divya talks about her academics, career background in the IT, thought process and a reason to venture into educational institution, how she handled the transition from an IT employee into full-time entrepreneurship, the challenges and the team behind her success, how she managed funding and the research went behind before the kickstart, COVID impacts and how the team managed in pulling it through, their experience in training the kids virtually, tips for parents worrying about increased screen exposure for kids, observation among the kids in kindergarten now with KG Kids 5 years before, and much more. So let's jump in. Hi, Divya. Thank you for coming on Indian Startup Stories today. I'm personally very excited as you're the very first woman entrepreneur on my show. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Ashok. It was really nice that I'm there on the podcast, and I'm really glad that I'm the first woman entrepreneur to be on the show. I'm really glad. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Please share about your background, education, and your initial career days.
Myself, I'm an engineer. I did my bachelor's in engineering and computer science from Bangalore, from a very reputed college. And then I continued taking up my MS in computer science from Wellington University. So this was my educational background, and then followed up, you know, once I had my transition in my career, I started working on many other child developmental courses. Like I did sessions on Montessori education, workshops on early childhood education, you know, like early childhood care and educational development, multiple intelligence by Gardner's principles. So these were certain other certifications which actually added on to it. I'm still looking for doing my B.Ed actually, so I'm still pursuing my B.Ed.
Okay, that's interesting. Nice to know. Please intro about your school, TBPS, its uniqueness and what attracts parents towards TBPS.
Okay, so TBPS, I can say it's like 13 years old. So it all started in the year of 2009. And with this particular journey, it is one of the division of Trained Brain Education Private Limited. Along with the preschools, we do have many other institutes which is associated with it, like the Teacher Training Institute, the Sports Academy, which is with that. And the uniqueness about the preschool, I could say, is like every school has a different uniqueness. And what's so unique about our school, I could say, you know, it's according to me, because whatever I'm talking is like according to the knowledge that what I have, and I feel the best, or I feel it is unique. Maybe it could be something which is very similar to the others itself, but I feel this. One is like the classrooms that we have, the infrastructure that we have got it earlier itself in 2009. So TBPS was one of the biggest preschools, you know. So that is one of the uniqueness, because it's never done keeping many restricted limitations, but it is done just like, you know, keeping the mindfulness of children, wherein there are play areas separated. So they have a dedicated space for every activity. So like, you know, the moment that the children walk into the school, so they have the lobby wherein they could, you know, say goodbye to their parents, and they smoothly get transitioned into a play area where the child can actually, you know, like relax and then get into a circle time activity zone, wherein every space that they actually move in, it's like, you know, it's a journey that the child actually, you know, paths through. And that's one of the beautiful ways it's been grafted, you know. So we designed the school in such a way that the children find it very attractive. And moreover, it's like the place is very child friendly. So we have separate classrooms, dedicated classrooms for each area. Like AV rooms are different, the classrooms are different. We have a child's library. The books are filled with, you know, the age level, subject oriented books. We have an auditorium, multiple environments for children, We have theater clubs at our school. Then we do have a gymnasium area. We have a free play zone. All these are the different areas that we have. So it's a dedicated space for every area. So there's no multi-sharing of the areas as such. So that's one thing which is unique. And second thing is like it's on the curriculum and content, because we don't stick to one curriculum, because children are 2 to 6 years of age, you know, so they are kind of absorbent mind, you know. So when we have these multiple, the curriculums which gets integrated, it becomes really beyond. So we follow 80% of Montessori because we also need a little bit of writing into the preschooling, wherein we work on the pencil grip, we give children a little announcement on that. So we kind of integrate it with other kinds of preschool methodologies also, like High Scopes method, Piaget's, Reggio Emilio, multiple intelligence for report writing and acting. So this one thing, it's like, I could say it is a little unique because we have a little of everything. So I could say it's like more or less like an integrated kind of a curriculum.
Wonderful. Yeah. Coming to the thought process, how did you venture into this educational field, and what was the thought process to address and solve the problem in this space?
Okay. So let me answer this in two parts. So it was at 2009 when Ashit, my elder one, was born. I introduced him to a concept of flashcards, you know. So flashcards are a large cards which will have pictures, numbers, words into it. So when the rule is like, you know, you need to flash those cards in front of the child, you know, not let it has to be at a flickering speed, you know, so you cannot flash it more than a second. So when I started showing them these cards in front of him, I was really surprised to see the enthusiasm that he showed, you know, to learn, the passion that he actually had. And this was something which is very rare in young children. This is also a unique ability to learn things efficiently. So that is when I started working out, you know, so why shouldn't I be doing something more for my child, wherein he would be able to read and write in a better way. I started realizing that, you know, children of 0 to 6 years, you know, so as soon as they're born, they're absorbent minds and they have amazing brain ability, you know, so their right brain capabilities, because it's filled with the virtual imaginations, or it could be towards the arts, it could be on towards the creativity part of it. And your left brain is more linguistic, your analytic thoughts, being logical, sequential and stuff like that. So the moment that I started seeing this in Ashit, you know, so I felt that, you know, right brain is something which is really very strong, that enables a child to learn much more efficiently, I could say, or much more effectively, because they need a lot of skills. You know, photographic memory is something which is a skill which you generally need for children to read. You know, so speed reading doesn't happen just like that. So this was one of the catch that I actually felt, you know, when my son was able to do it, when I was able to help him, you know, to stand up strong on this particular way of learning, I felt that, you know, it can be really helpful. So it started with the family members. I started creating content for my own nephews and nieces, and then to my neighborhood, my, you know, community members, everybody was so impressed. So that was a point that actually I felt like, you know, why shouldn't I be doing something which was relating to the community and stuff like that. And and slowly I saw that there was a lot of academic progress. There was a lot of focus for my child. The attention span was really good enough, you know. So, you know, as I said, like, you know, he was able to read, like when he was around 4.5 years, like novels. He could cover up the entire Sidney Sheldon stories and series like that. So that was one thing. So it all started with doing the content for my son, and then getting it into the level of preschooling itself.
That's wonderful to know. 4 years old kid actually reading novel, quite impressive. You have started your career as an IT consultant, and gradually you shifted yourself to entrepreneurship. What made you to think to start something of your own? And please talk about how you prepared yourself for this transition from employee to entrepreneur.
See, the transition from employee to entrepreneur was not that easy. It took a lot of time for me to decide. I thought for myself many number of years, I could say, you know, whether I have to be taking up the full-time entrepreneurship, because I had my own insecurities. I had my own, you know, like fears of, you know, starting something new, because it's something which is very riskier all the while, right? So when it was a moment, then when I had a bigger idea, I saw that, that there were a good amount of responses regarding the schooling and regarding opening it, opening the school. It was like, it took really, you know, in a good way. And for me, like, you know, before starting or before taking it up at the full time, I started running parallelly. I was working in one of the company, and then at the same time, I started, you know, working on to my school. I started making the content for it. You know, I started working on the curriculum management, the planning for it. There was a team which was dedicatedly, which was actually working on it. So parallelly, we worked on all of that. You know, we started very slow. When we saw that there was a great response, when it was like booming up, that was the time that, you know, I felt that I need to be there full time. So that's how I started. It was never like, you know, I jumped in with a bigger idea with that. No, it took a lot of time. A small idea which got converted into a larger perspective.
Yeah, running parallelly your school and also doing work.
Yes, not simple. Yes.
You started a new venture and running the establishment for a long time. I guess now it's more than a decade now. How do you handle customer retention? In your case, it's parents and students in your school. What's your approach when you encounter any kind of problem in running the educational institution?
First, importantly, I know every student of mine. I know every parent who are associated with the child, because the first interaction that happens, whoever walks into my school, they actually undergo a first interaction with me. Then is where the students and the parents are routed to their respective class teachers, because from there, children and parents are with their hands. Luckily, like, you know, we have not encountered major problems, which has actually come to my, knowledge, because everything is sorted at the teacher's level itself. And they're so guided, they're able to take it up. What consistently we are always like look forward is like, you know, that we don't encounter much of the problems. But, you know, so you cannot be 100% perfect. You know, there could be slight negligences. There could be slight problems that we encountered, you know, like petty things like, you know, the child has not completed the lunchbox, or the child has was hurt in the school. So these are the smaller issues that we've actually encountered. And the first thing is like we admit. Okay, so it's like, you know, you got to apologize. So that's where it is. You need to be in a service industry, because something that the parent was actually promised and it was not delivered, we take it up. You know, so we also make sure, like, why was the child not able to eat the lunchbox? There could be different reasons which is getting associated with it. Even the smallest things are never negligent, you know, like gone unnoticed in the school. So the teachers are aware. When it comes to my notice, they are aware of it. When we sit down and discuss, maybe it's the same tiffin box. It's coming every day. The child is bored of eating that snack. That's what we got to know. And, you know, so you always ask the child, you know, why is the child not interested to eat? You know, when the child gives you the answers and explanations, the moment that you share that thing to the parent, you know, so there are sometimes, Ashok, the parents are not aware about what the child is actually feeling, you know, so they might think this is really good. But when they're in an environment where they are with the other students, maybe they like the other one's box, you know, that's the reason that they're not able to like the food. So those are some things, you know. So you could see, like, you know, it's not only that I encounter problems and I resolve the problems, it's the entire team. So if my team is not working with me, maybe the problems could be really more than that. So I have never, encountered much of the greater problems as such.
Okay. How big is your team?
Our team is like more than 45 to 50. So we are in the two-digit number. So we started with one teacher and now the team is really
pretty big. Yeah, 45, team of 45 is big. Being founder of this institution, can you talk about your founding team and the individual challenges that you faced before you kickstarted this business?
Okay, my initial founding team, I could say the first 3 years were very crucial for me. And whoever were there in the first 3 years are there with us till now. Okay, so that's one of the very happy moments for me. So it started with me, Madhu. Madhu is my husband. And with another teacher called Madhura. And that was the first year. So that was in 2009. So Madhura actually ran 3 batches, because we were in a very small space of 2,000 square feet and most of our area had taken up for the activity. So as I said, like, you know, right from the beginning days, our centers were like more towards activity centers rather than the typical classrooms. And because the classroom sizes were like only 2 or 3 classes we had to run in batches. And I have to be really thankful for her, because, you know, when we started with 4, and she was the one who could pull it through to 45 for the coming academic year. And that's the larger number. And it was just one teacher handling all the different age levels, you know, right from playgroup to M1 to M2 and M3. And we had children in different classes. And amazing human being. I could say, like, she is my angel guardian sometimes. Because, you know, when things has to happen right, when everybody has got the same goal, vision, and you want to aim towards something very effortlessly, it cannot be a one-man show. So I had a lovely team, so she supported. And when we were growing in number, I had other members who joined us. And thankfully, like, you know, everybody have been so supportive. Everyone has helped us grow. And then it was like we had Shanti, we had Namrita, we had Amrita, we had Rashmi, all of them. All of them were our initial employees, and they're still associated with us, you know. So it is all because of them. Now we are in 300 plus, 400 plus students, because that's our saturation. We cannot take beyond. Otherwise, we would have been in thousands.
Okay, nice. So being a founder, what are the conflicts you get to handle in this management on a daily basis?
Luckily, like we don't have a bigger team. It's run by me and my husband. So we decide. So there are smaller conflicts when it comes down to choosing particular equipments or manipulatives for the school. There are little ones, but we always go by what is needed for children. And these are resolved within the team. It's never the management decision alone. So we have this team meetings, and we have a level head teachers for every levels. When we sit together, the first priority could be like, what's essential for the coming academic year? We allocate a particular budget. If there is any conflict, it gets resolved there itself. Madhukar is like, you know, completely, he handles the financials, and he tells. If it cannot be supported, he tells. So there's no point of conflicts over there. See, our streams are totally different. I handle completely only curriculum and the team, and he handles the financial part of it. So we don't venture into each other's businesses. So when the financially budget is not allocated to the team, so we don't have it. So he allocates the budget. Maybe it could be for our celebrations or our annual events or our sports events. There's some kind of a budget which goes to the team, and it is up to us. It's up to me and my teachers to allocate it wisely for the entire academic year. So then there is nothing like which is going to be conflicting. It's my smaller things, like, you know, I don't like the color, I don't like this. Those are the conflicts that we have today.
The easier ones to handle, yeah.
Yes, nice. The easier ones to handle sometimes, yes.
Okay. So how were the days before you started getting good responses? How long did you have to wait to feel comfortable in your journey? Any specific instances of who helped you and how you handled it?
Oh, yes. The first thing is like I got real good help from both my family and my team members, because if my family wouldn't have helped me, probably I couldn't spend a more number of hours, you know. So initial days, it was really hectic because it was a new brand. It was a new school in the community, and we had to look up and keep up to the expectations of everybody, because when something is new, people do doubt you. And what kept us moving is like, you know, so you are doing, so you have to compete within yourself. We kept on doing the best of ourselves. So that was one of the initial day challenges that I actually faced it. And slowly after that, you know, so once my family started supporting me, I never bothered about the home. It could be like doing laundry or keeping things up for the next day. So that I was not much pressurized about it. Secondly is like, you know, we had a very small team. So taking up our, you know, like work was very easy because we did not have too many conflicts, as I said before. And it went smoother, but it took at least like 3 to 4 years for me, you know, to see the response. People started, getting to see the value of what we are actually trying to say. And whatever was said was like they could see it, you know, so that was one thing. So it took at least like initially 2 to 3 years or something, which was there.
Okay. Yeah, you had to wait that quality time. Can you talk about the funding you managed to pull in to kickstart TVPS?
Ashok, like funding, we had a particular number because we did a lot of research, like what it takes to start a preschool. And we noted down on the priorities, you know, what needs to be gone. And especially like when you're opening up a child center, you need to be working towards the play equipments, the child safety mats and cushions, and a lot of investment onto the books and creating environments for them, or the Montessori labs, so different kinds of classroom setups that you need to be doing. So this was one thing that we had a budget which was planned. So we got a number from the vendors. We listed all of that. And then we did a quick market survey, you know, the survey, you know, should I be investing on these tools or that? We got best quotes from all of them. You know, every penny I have saved in the initial days, you know, so this vendor was quoting 10 rupees less. I've gone for that particular vendor, and I've stuck. I'm still stuck with the same vendor still now, because they were the ones who actually helped us at the beginning. It's not that, you know, you need to change. So that's my way that I look into it, you know. So I have a great relationship with all my vendors, you know, so being so far. And we've helped each other's in one other's business. That's one thing. And second is like, you know, I got everything prioritized. So there was no unnecessary shopping for the school, which was not required. If I did not have children, I did not invest in another extra classroom. I had a classroom, but I had to get children. The more that I started getting the students, which was enrolled, the class was getting ready every week. So in that cases, it's like, you know, so we never faced the initial budget issues. We knew about a number. It is going to be expensive. We knew about it. We waited for a very longer time. We arranged all the budget. It was me and my husband. We pulled in a little bit of money, maybe like, you know, at the 2009, it was, it costed us like more than 25 lakhs, you know, to set up one Montessori environment with a good full-fledged classes. At that time, you know, investing 25 lakhs was like really huge because I always believe when you do something new, you better stand out in that particular place. And that's how you also create a visibility, you know. So that's how TrainBrain also stood. TrainBrain always stood for their well-lighted class environments, or it could be the environments, or it could be the people that you invest in. So I always believe invest in good people rather than going for a cheap stuff, you know. So you pay a better salary, so you get a better teacher who's very resourceful, you know, who's capable of doing three teachers' work. That's how I did for Madhura. When I hired her, I saw the potential in her. So the budget was like carefully allocated. We saw there was like a good amount of need for anything and other things. So the fund we equally balanced. It was like me, my husband, we equally pulled in, and then we worked with that. So it went good. Okay. We saw good response. There was a response. Okay. There was value for money. So so it went. So when we invested also, we invested in materials which could stay for like 5 years and 6 years. So it was all the quality products. So it was never onto the cheap products.
That's nice. Yeah. Good amount of planning has gone there. Nice. When was the first moment of relief in TBPS since the inception? You might have gone through a lot of challenges, but which instance gave you this the relief time?
Yes. The first moment of relief, the relief time is like when I moved from we started in a small space is what I said, because we did not wanted to invest more and start really big, because we had our own fears of, you know, getting to understand like how the business was going to be. The moment of relief is like, you know, when we saw a good number, when we saw great potential that we could actually work with in this particular area, when we moved to our own campus. So that was in 2009. We moved to a larger campus with 10,000 square feet, and it was our own premise. So that was a big moment of relief for me at that particular moment, because I'm a person who loves to do something for children at that particular moment. And I felt that there was relief that, you know, it's like owning something is a bigger relief. It could be small, but you got to own it, you know. So that was a moment of relief for me. From that day, every day, it's been like a moment of relief for me, you know. So when children go home and we get the trigger alert at 3:30 p.m., you know, like all the children have reached home safely, that's again a moment of relief. So it's not only for me, for all of us.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. So any specific instance in your school stories where you felt you did bring change for the community you want to serve? Generally for business, it's always the customer stories. So how unique is the experience in your field?
Yes, I cannot say it as an instance, but when children do come up with different kinds of needs, you know, so we accept them wholeheartedly without any judgment. So there are no interactive tests which gives a room for an admission at TBPS, because every child has got their own potential and ability to work with. But rather what we do is like we question and ask about every student, like, you know, about their well-being, what actually comforts them when they're into a new environment, because that's a transition phase for them. They're leaving their parents and coming to another environment. So that was one of the challenge. So for me, like what changed or like, you know, what made me look up is that, you know, so earlier we never had any special students enrolling into our campus. And slowly, like, you know, this was one of the change that we actually bought. And so we started accepting students who needs a little bit of special care and education, and we started working with that. We got tied up with many institutions too, so which could be really beneficial for them to get their therapies or to get a little bit of consultation or, you know, help them counsel a little better. So this was one of the things. And I could not say this was challenging. It is little, but in our own way. But once you start understanding the child and what they need, it is not going to be that very difficult. So you need to have a listening ear and a kind heart to accept them. So that's what I feel. So.
Nice. Coming to the impact of COVID, how COVID has impacted you? Schools were the first institutions to close down. Please talk through how you managed and how you and your team pulled it through.
Okay. So likely that all of us have experienced this imposition of lockdown, right? So it's the shock to the entire system. And personally, like I have experienced a lot of, distractions. It could be like, I have felt lonely sometimes. I have felt listless sometimes. To be very frank, I was also anxious because every time we were so driven to distractions, not only by family, but even professionally also. And constantly, like we are under each other's heels. And above all, everything happened at the same time. Right. So as individual, I had to make a lot of changes to my life, be it small, be it big. Every day I had to change it. I had to, schedule. I had to reschedule. I had to, custom everything accordingly. But even though we were physically distanced, the internet and social media actually kept us together, for each other from each other's homes, I could say, not only for days, but for a few months. So our social relationships have not got suffered. But at the same time, what I could also say is like, COVID has also allowed me to explore a lot of my hobby ideas. So I have learned a lot across the schools. You could say like, more than over like 1.2 billion children are out of their classrooms. So, but what I could say is like, as a result, that education system has dramatically changed. I could say in a distinctive rise of these e-learning platforms, whereby the teaching is only like undertaken remotely. And on digital platforms. But you must at least like understand like how many of the children are able to get the online learning.
True.
If they're not able to get, what is the alternate source to it? We don't have any alternative to increase the retention of information. At least like online platforms are helping them to not to forget the information, what they've already learned it. And if you see like, the younger kids, it's still fine. People say it's like, preschools, it's only ABCDs and numbers, but it's not that. It's way beyond. Mm-hmm. The child is actually learning to step out of their home, get socialized with the others, right? Now, this sudden shift away from classrooms has made so many parents to drop the admissions to schools also. They say they are homeschooling. Mm-hmm. Absolutely good enough. If the children are not able to take up the online classes because of multiple reasons, So we have parents, both of them working, and the classes do happen at the same time. It's very difficult for them. So all these reasons have caused a lot of admission drops for this academic year. And if the children are learning, it's good. If they're not able to, we still are not able to find an alternative source to retain the information what they have actually learned it. So one way it is like it has hampered a lot in the education sector.
And now everyone is actually forced to get some kind of a tech support to run things virtually. How are you handling this tech support behind running TBPS during COVID?
See, and tech also now? Support. As I said, like my team is equipped. We have been using the technology since almost like the very beginning days, right from 2004. Right from 2014, the school is on the school application. So we have the school app, and the teachers know about it. So the daily updates goes, the weekly updates goes, the monthly calendars, the events, everything is on the platform. So they are quite good enough in handling the basic tools like, Microsoft Word or Excel or make PowerPoints, make lessons and everything. But what we were never exposed is like, coming live on screen, talking to one another, sharing this because, so every time we used to do that in front of a classroom, we're so used to educate children standing in a larger group or the smaller groups, but never in front of the screen. So this was one of the challenge. So the first 5 days or 6 days, most of us, including my teachers, we were anxious, we were nervous, we were shy. To come in front of the camera because it's not only the children who are actually watching, it's the parents, the grandparents, the entire family is watching you and they're able to judge you, what kind of a language she has. Look at the way that she is dressed. Is the teacher? Is my child going to be learning the same way? And everybody had a lot of issues because nobody was staying in the same place. It's very difficult, and they're young and that age is so vulnerable and the children might not be able to sit in one particular place. Even in the physical classes, children cannot sit for more than 7 minutes in a classroom. How do you expect them to sit in an online class for 30 minutes? It's very difficult.
Yeah.
So that was when we actually had to do a lot of technical changes, So we have, and we did not want it to play the nursery rhymes from a different channel. And that was the idea which was actually shared by our teachers. They did not want it to pick up any videos or any resources from somebody else's. If it's Monica's class, she has to do everything. Monica has to sing. Monica has to dance. Monica has to do PT. Monica has to do something else and then pick up her lesson. Yeah. That has to be according to it. And it's like, you know, those girls have done amazing, you know. So it went period by period. And everybody got accustomed to learning the tools, especially for nursery rhymes. They learned about, you know, recording with a green screen, animating it, putting their visuals, dancing around, doing the video editing, you know, like, you know, pulling out the audio, then rendering it, voice-overing it. You name it, they're able to do it. They're able to use different tools. They're able to edit on a mobile. They're able to, you give them a PC, they're able to do it. And that's the confidence that they have got. See, this is in turn, you know, like it was difficult for the first month. I have to agree and admit, because we felt a lot of difficulties at that time. But now we are very proud that, you know, we could, each one has got a different talent. And because of we know, you know, how capable are they? We, you know, you can never underestimate anybody's potential. Now, everybody is so technically strong, I could say, at least to, like, what is required for a preschool, they're able to use. So
yeah,
that, in
good
that
amount
way,
of extra work. Has
now we are
been,
happy,
yeah.
You know, like, you know, so it's like you got to struggle. Only when you struggle, only when there's pressure, only when there are deadlines, only when you have to meet, only when it is written in paper that you have to be doing, we do it. You know, how much ever that somebody tells us, it takes it, you know, and then after a week, we're all by ourselves. There has to be some person who keeps bombarding you with lessons and goals and, you know, short time, term goals and stuff like that. And they do it. And it's nice to see the numbers. And now you will see the numbers. Every teacher has more than 200, 300 videos.
Okay.
Some of the nursery channels have come to us. You know, can we buy your videos? You know, so it's like, you know, that's a good sign, you know, so we have still not said yes, not anything, but we felt really proud about ourselves. You know, so we have done something nice, you know, so something very useful, so which we could use it later. So technically, that's yes, nice. Whatever bit we could do, they have done it. It's not only me, it's the entire team.
Okay. Yeah. Myself as a parent comes this question on increased screen engagement time for kids, right? What's your tips to handle this mindset dilemma on how long in a day should we keep them engaged in screen? I'm sure this is the biggest concern for most of the parents, right?
Now I think it's much more appropriate because with the school shut down and most of the children are holed up inside their homes all the day.
Yeah.
And they're so increasingly dependent on this digital medium, right? Both for their education and for their recreation, I could say. Most of them, you know, including my children, they've become obese. Their health is getting affected. And the learning capabilities, even though sometimes it's going to a peak at one level because they're learning so many things on the digital screen. But what about the exposure of learning something else? You know, the skating classes or the karate classes or the physical classes. That's hampering their learning capabilities. And because of all of this, see, when there is no physical work which is given, it will definitely affect them into their, you know, like other areas of learning. Maybe their attention, you know, they are becoming deficit. They're becoming attention deficit. Children cannot concentrate. Even if they're waking up with mobile phones, you know, you have to see that. Most of the questions, parents actually ask me, you know, Divya, my son cannot wake up if I don't give him the mobile phone. That's the addiction to it. The concentration is getting decreased. Oh. They're not able to read, write, because always everything is like around, you know, even if the parent says, you know, read beta, they want, mama, can you give me my app? You know, the homework is written in that, you know, so all the while that we teachers and educators, we told children to stay away from screen and look at what COVID has done. This pandemic has actually turned the entire education upside down. And one man said that now the entire school is in the mobile phone. And see, this has disrupted the entire pattern of the education system. And we're helpless with that, right? And the more that the children are watching on the screen time, it is disrupting their, you know, like the sleeping patterns because, you know, the melatonin production is actually great and that impairs it. And so many of them are started wearing the glasses because of the eyesight issues.
True.
And there's no other alternative because it be it the games, be it interaction, everything is actually happening on screen. The mindset of parents are like the same. So they also are helpless. But what we could always do is like, you know, find an alternative. Even if you're doing on screen time, what you need to do is like, you know, you need to set a limit for the screen time, you know, so you need to be really firm. I'm not saying to be very strict. You can be really firm. Like, you know, you have only 30 minutes of screen time a day and you can, you can tell them, this is what we're going to play. This is the game, though. This is the quiz that we're going to be working. So you set a particular base for it. So you sit on the table where children can actually work and you watch them. And TVs, do not place them in your bedrooms. Have a planned TV time. Read. Mm-hmm. Other than that, you know, you can always find alternative resources. You could cook a meal together. You could play some board games together. See, it's all there. You know, it's like how we parent. It's not that you need to be dependent on the school, you know, so it's not that we teachers will have to be telling you that, you know, don't watch TV. As you parent, you can take the responsibility of setting limits for your children. Tell them, you know, do not watch TV and don't be dependent on teachers. They'll be like, you know, if the teacher says my child is going to do, no, I'm always against that. Your children will learn everything and everything from you because they are more with you. It's like how you do everything is how you do anything. That's how you have to pick it up. So it's all in the mindset. It's all in the mindset. See, I am a person who is always encouraging children to get along with technology. I always tell them, you know, you need to be working with that. You need music. You need content. You need interactions. So you need some kind of a screen time. Children understand it better. You know, I cannot do art and craft all the while. It is so nice to show me a visual picture. And the more you show them in a photographic memory or the visual, the children will be able to grasp it very nicely. But that has to be only for some minutes. And thereon, you build the content. You get involved them into a conversation. Ask them questions. Comprehend. You know, so that's how you will actually be working. So do not put the screen time. You know, it's good. You know, you need to find an alternative sources. You know, TV is great. TV is great. The other sources are great. Internet is great. It's one source of, I can say, Gnan Bhandar or knowledge.
Yeah,
for learning. You have to resourcefully use it. That's it.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Now we have different syllabus for teaching kids, right? What is one big concern or confusion you see among parents these days? And how do you address them with different set of syllabuses and different set of categories?
Okay, see, there are different curriculums. There are different boards. And selecting a curriculum depends upon numerous factors. And we have to be understanding this. You know, I cannot say that, you know, because I like CBSE, I cannot say everybody to take up CBSE or ICSE. So parents will have to understand and they have to consider before taking this particular step consistently. One is like, I could say like, you know, what is your aspiration? What do you want your child to become? Or what is the aspiration of what your child wants to become? Okay, so this is one greatest thing. And what is your goal? What could be the goals of your children? And do you constantly relocate? Maybe it is locally or globally. Okay, so you need to be choosing the curriculum or the syllabus, or I could say even the board according to this. Now, what if you're constantly relocating locally? I would prefer go to CBSE because it's the nationwide curriculum and children will not have a lot of difficulty in coping up with the same curriculum. And now, what if you're globally like relocating? At that time, you could choose syllabus like IB or IGCSE. Because in that cases, what happens, your children will not be hampered with the learning interest. Or it also depends on the varied interest what your child has got. Some children are good in art, some are good in music. So the affordability factor also matters a show because every board has got a different fee structure. We need to also look into it like, you know, can we afford? You know, all these are some of the major concerns. So I tell them very frankly about these are the options that you have it and you need to be taking a look through. And all thanks to NEP because people were worried earlier, like, you know, they had to choose up only CBSE or ICSE because you wanted your children to become technically good enough, right? But now there's nothing like that. Every student can take up any subject at any particular point and they could drop or they could even re-pick it up, you know. So there are a good amount of educational changes which is actually happening and we will foresee that in the coming academic years. Now the 10+2 system is now changed to 5+3+4.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and the change is there in all the categories, right? Irrespective of higher studies or kindergartens, right?
Yes.
What's your observation about kids now in KGs compared to the batch 5 years ago?
I could say they're super smart. Okay, so they don't have the fear of coming to school. They don't have the fear of leaving their parents and staying for 2 hours in school. You could see like the number of students who had trouble in settling down has really come down in the past 5 years, if you see. That could be because the exposure that the children have already got, because they would have introduced a lot of play dates now. Parents would have organized a lot of play dates. They are staying in a good community wherein they could socialize it much better. So and that is one of the things. And then is like they already know the content. It could be alphabets or numbers or any other conceptuals. They know about it. They come with a handful of information. So whenever we sit down for the interaction, children know many things. And they're fine with it. They know that, you know, when we say, okay, your mother will not be there in the school, you have to say goodbye. They're like, I already know that, you know. Now, the parents are being so positive. They are being very truthful to them. You know, earlier days, we used to say, like, you know, I had seen myself, you know, the parents, moms and dads used to say, baby, don't go, don't cry, you know, I'll be sitting here only. But the schools will never allow them to sit. So it's like you're lying there, right? The child has still got the same thing that, you know, my mother or father is going to be sit there. And they walk around the corridors when they don't find them. It's a kind of, you know, the trust. But these days, what we always have seen is like, you know, the parents are so positive. They say, it's just 1 hour. I'm going home. I'm coming back. Okay. They're already setting that in mind. So the child is so absorbent into that. They're like, okay, my mother's going and then she'll come back again. So I'll have to stay here. So they know that. Okay. And that is one thing that I've seen. And it's really good. It's really good that, you know, that we see a lot of, you know, like children being very, very educated right from the beginning, you know. So that's why we say home is the first schooling and the parents are the first teachers, right? So
Yeah, true.
Balanced, I could say that.
Nice. So what is one important quality you teach to your own kids?
Adaptability.
Okay.
They have to adapt to changes. I feel it's important because you cannot stick your life to certain rules that this is how it's going to be. See, the COVID has taught us so many things, right? So we need to be adaptable to changes. So that's one thing that I would suggest for everybody, not only to my child, to everyone.
Okay, nice. So for people going through failures, what's your message from your experience in order to uplift them?
Failures, is it? Okay. So in that case, I could say, like, you know, right from Thomas Alva Edison to Walt Disney, it is like, you know, we never shortfall of people, you know, like having the failure. See, the key to failure is like, you know, when you try to please everybody. You know, this was something that I had it initially. So this is my own experience. I was a person that I used to always feel like, you know, when I do things, everybody should like it. I know I was like a perfectionist, you know, it has to be like this. It has to be like this. The more that I went on, it was very difficult for me to let go. You know, so I was like, you know, every time when somebody used to not like the work, this was in the early days. And as a child, when I was raised and everything, and whatever I used to do, I was not very satisfied by myself. And I used to always feel that I'm a failure. I couldn't do that. And all this was accompanied by many emotions of mine. You know, so I was embarrassed at sometimes. I was anxious at sometimes. I was anger. You know, maybe I could not express it. I was sad. I was shameful. There were so many emotions which got attached to it. And the moment that I started realizing, I felt bad about myself because it was not at all motivating for me. And slowly, once I started embracing the failure, that became a motivational factor for me. I said to myself, you know, the more you grow older, you start realizing that failure is not only yours, it's there in everybody's life, you know. So what you need to do is like take that bad. It's okay to feel bad. You know, you need to feel good. It's not that you have to feel only good. I started accepting to feel bad because that was motivating me. I cried. I felt sad for that particular moment. I started reasoning out, you know, what was that thing which actually made me to feel sad? This was the failure. I started working harder the next day. I started finding the solutions for it. So the next time I started improving on that particular thing, I started embracing all my emotions. I started liking the failure. And every time that this happened to me, I started writing. If you see my goal book, I'll have so many goals, you know. So it's like more. Definitely. Everybody will have 3 goals, 5 goals, 6 goals. I'll have like 500 to 1,000 goals altogether. And I have recorded all over through my voice. And I affirm every time, you know. So failure is nothing that, you know, it's bad, you know. So you call a friend, you talk about it. You know, so I have very less number of friends. I talk about them. You know, this is how. Maybe the failure, whatever I feel, in others' perspective, they wouldn't feel it. You know, so everybody has got a different opinion on their own failures, right? So I started removing the irrational beliefs about what I had. Then I started, you know, like getting thoughts like, this is actually not failure. Maybe it is a mistake or it's a galti, right? So I started developing the realistic thoughts about what's a failure about. Then I started writing the affirmations. Let me challenge to do something more difficult every time. And I started telling that I can handle failures. I can learn from my failures. The moment that I started working in it, I started working on taking responsibility. Earlier, I used to give excuses, you know, so I could blame others easily because this is what most of the human beings do that, right? I'm being very honest with you, you know, so this is what you almost do when you fail. You have to start looking for explanations and not excuses. Identify your reasons, acknowledge them for what you do it and do it differently the next time. Maybe you will be less failed at that time, you know?
True, yeah. Thank you. How do you stay calm during the day of chaos?
How do I stay calm during the day of chaos? Chaos is there. What I would do is like, you know, I'm taking a break, right? So I step back usually. I take a break. I don't work during that time. I do a lot of breathing exercises at that time. I'll be very mindful. I'm a person who will think twice, thrice before I speak out anything. I write down what I need to be speaking, you know, all the harshness, all the bad things come out on paper. I feel it's much more better rather than, you know, speaking it out, you know. So I usually stay calm. Chaos is there in everybody's life, you know, so it will be there. So at that particular moment, you know, I would suggest like everybody to step back, relax for a minute. If you're not able to work, it's okay. Take a break. You know, nothing's going to end your day. Work on your breathing because that's when people lose the sense, you know, so and be more mindful. It's very relaxing.
That's nice. What is your suggestion for young people having big ideas, but they are afraid to begin with?
See, the young people, they have a lot of ideas, I could say, like, you know, so the young talent is something that we need to be also always be encouraging because they are coming with new technologies. They're coming with new innovations. Their creativity is amazing. They meet great talent. You know, the social circle is really good enough. What they are worried is like, you know, sharing the idea, you know, not many share the ideas because they are always fearful. Somebody's going to steal my idea. Okay.
Right.
So because of that, they kind of, you know, like keep quiet sometimes. And then somebody else comes up with something similar ideas. You know, they feel very low and they consider themselves to be failures and they start attempting for a newer idea. This is one of the things. Second is like, you know, we cannot say every time to share all the ideas because not every people will be the same, you know. So sometimes what happens, they might pick, others might pick their ideas and answer it a little and prove it as their idea too. So this is there with the younger generation because they are worried about sharing their ideas, you know. So when you feel that the idea is good, I would always suggest them go for it. You know, so go for it. Don't wait for 10 days of development, adding things to it, you know, making it look more beautiful, making a beautiful presentation. No, it's a thought that you had it. If somebody likes it, they will say yes. If they don't like it, you work on it. Make it much more better. Start getting inputs from them. So don't wait for 100 days to complete everything. And when that person says, no, it is not good, then don't do a rework. It's okay. Start with a new idea. Share it with your friend. Start building on it.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yes. Moving on to the next segment of this episode, rapid fire questions. I'll just bring it.
Okay.
What is the best thing that happened to you this month?
I think we are closing our academic session in April when the dates was released. I was a little relaxed.
Oh, nice. What time you sleep and wake up and how does your first few hours of morning look like?
I sleep very late, 11:30. I wake up early, around 5:30. When I wake up early in the morning, I listen to my own affirmations. That's how my day starts.
Okay. If you want to go back and change one decision in your journey of this institution, what would that be?
One thing to change is like, you know, to get most of the things digitized because I'm a person who likes the digital environment, to balance it out, you know, the digital and the old traditional methods.
Nice. An article or a book you recently read and which one you liked it?
I like a book by Tony. Okay, so this was all about mindful reading. Tony Buzan, actually.
Okay, and what's your childhood activity you still like to do?
I don't know what it is called. I like Lagori and I like the marble game. You know, so I don't know what you generally call it. I've played it enough.
Yeah, but I get it, Lagori, right? Yeah. Okay, who's your favorite leader?
Leader, it's my teacher. I still consider her as my mentor, my leader, because she was the one who made all of us, you know, to think positive. So I still consider her to be my leader.
Okay, nice. What does creativity mean to you in one sentence?
Creativity is within you, so you could embrace it. So do whatever it is, and that's going to be your creativity.
Okay. How long do you read in a day?
More than an hour.
That's nice. And what's your retirement plan?
I have not made any. Maybe I'll retire one day. And the plan is like, you know, being with children itself, you know. So I have not imagined anything without being children in my environment. So.
Okay. And your favorite city to live in?
I like Bangalore.
Nice. I expected. So that's the end of the show. And for people who are listening and who don't know about you and TVPS, where should they look for?
Okay. So if you're new and if you do not know about Trainbrain Preschool, it is one of the division of Trainbrain Education Private Limited. We have two centers in Bangalore, one in Thodanaikundi and one in Munnekolala. And I will drop you the links. You can find us on Facebook. We are on Instagram. We are on YouTube. You could follow us up over there, or you could also visit us in the physical centers. Both. We're available from Monday to Friday from 10 a.m. to 12:30.
That's nice. I'll definitely leave those links in my description. It was wonderful having you on my show, Divya, and getting to know about all the information and the knowledge that you have.
Thank you, Ashok. Thank you so much.
Okay, we are at the end of episode number 8. Thank you very much, Divya, for coming on and sharing the insights. And to our listeners, you can find out the episode summary in the description. Until we catch up soon, stay tuned, be motivated. Thank you.